It's 7:34 in the morning. You are listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks.
And I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert, picking up with the immigration raids that may not have been. Again, reporting in the New York Times and other outlets was that the federal government was set to start raids targeting some 2,000 undocumented immigrants that would include, quote-unquote, collateral deportations. People who were not targets of removal orders, who were caught through incidental contact with Immigration and Customs Enforcement during those raids. The date, according to the reporting, that the raids were going to start is Sunday. So far, no confirmed reports of them happening. Now, since San Francisco was one of the cities that had purportedly been slated to be subject to the raids, we scheduled time this morning to speak to one of the people tasked with representing immigrants in the city. San Francisco is one of just three local jurisdictions in the country that devotes resources from the public defender's office to representing people in immigration court, where immigrants do not have a right to counsel, unlike criminal defendants in this country. We're joined now by Francisco Ugarte. He's an attorney with the Immigration Unit of the San Francisco Public Defender's Office. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, what did you hear about yesterday?
Well, we were on call all day yesterday. We had a squad of about nine people from our office ready to provide representation, and no reports came to us. There's a hotline in San Francisco where that's been very well disseminated. Community members are aware that you call this hotline if someone's picked up during a raid. No calls, no verified raids yesterday. But we're ready. We have a very strong network of attorneys, not only here at our office, but throughout the Bay Area, and to provide immediate and zealous representation to anyone who's picked up during a raid.
Francisco, to your point, you said you're ready, and also ready are advocates and organizers and people that are prepared to put their bodies on the line to interrupt these raids if necessary. Why, we were talking about this earlier, why do you think that the Trump administration would announce, that the DHS would announce when it's coming for communities?
Yeah, it really makes no sense, right? I mean, if they're saying they're looking for fugitives from justice, you don't say beforehand, hey, we're coming for you, because guess what's going to happen? No. Obviously, this is a fear tactic, and it's a distraction from what's really going on in this country. And it's a way for people to suddenly talk about raids or immigration. And Trump has been, unfortunately, quite effective at getting people to repeat his own message. And what we need to do when we hear about these things, I mean, we're prepared, we're ready, but we also need to have a calming effect that, folks, we can beat raids. We've done it before. We're going to do it again. We have representation for you, and we're not going to, buy into these fear-mongering tactics. We're very effective. You know, I've seen raids many times in my career. In 2008, 2009, there was a big raid at a taqueria, the El Balazo Taqueria, where about 70 people were arrested on the same day. It was a very ugly day, but it turns out all those people who fought their cases won their cases. Mm. I saw a lot of collateral arrests in homes in 2009, 2010, under the Obama administration. We had a rapid response network then. We provided representation and won virtually all of those cases. So the main problem about a raid is if ICE can deprive someone of access to counsel, because there's that about 24-hour period, maybe even shorter, 4 to 6 hour period, where a person has a chance to accept a voluntary return. And if they sign off on their own deportation, then there's not much you can do. But if they have access to counsel, they can stop that. And then there's time to provide a legal defense.
Given that, what was the significance of the court order that was issued Saturday enjoining ICE from deporting anyone without letting them see an attorney?
I think it was extraordinary. I think this is a kind of community and legal collaboration we need to launch defenses against our integrity as human beings in the Bay Area. A court essentially warned ICE, don't hold people incommunicado. Let people visit with lawyers. Now, it's unclear whether they were going to launch these raids today or not, because in other parts of the country where this order, may not have applied, they didn't really engage in mass sweeping actions. But again, you know, having been denied countless times by immigration to go and, you know, be present while they're being interviewed, while a client's being interviewed, this order is really a cutting edge, strong statement. And it's a really beautiful example of advocacy in advance of something like this.
Is it the kind of thing that's likely to move up the court hierarchy and affect a broader portion of the country? Is this something the Trump administration would appeal and fight?
You know, I'm not really sure what the lawyers want to do. We're not part of this lawsuit, so I think that would be a question for them. But in terms of the fundamental issue of access to counsel, I do think that issue is going to go up in the courts. I mean, the way ICE works, it lacks transparency, and that most effective thing it can do is to deprive someone from a lawyer and just extrajudicially deport people. And they have tools to do that. There's something called expedited removal that happens closer to the border, but they also have the ability to simply get someone to sign a paper and then deport them. And if people don't have access to counsel, it makes it very difficult. ICE is also transferring people from jurisdictions from, like, say, West County, when West County detention facility was thankfully closed. ICE, instead of transferring them locally to other detention centers or releasing them, they transferred them to Colorado. And so that presented some tremendous challenges to lawyers and family members and advocates. What do we do about this? So the notion of access to counsel is paramount.
And how quickly can those transfers happen? Like, if I'm picked up at 8 a.m., how quickly could they get me on a plane and into another jurisdiction?
If it's one person, very, very quickly. I once had a client, I got a call at 7 in the morning and said, "Oh, I'm being transferred to Louisiana today." I'm like, "What?" But if you're looking at en masse transfers, like 500 people, 1,000 people, that gets kind of administratively challenging. So, but it could feasibly happen very quickly. That's why we need access to individuals in custody.
Francisco Ugarte, I was thinking about this last night and was thinking, well, you know, I'm looking at the list of the cities. Several of those are sanctuary cities. Are folks that don't have papers actually safer in sanctuary cities? What is the significance of that for folks that are being targeted?
That's a great question. And absolutely, undocumented people, all of us, every one of us is safer in a sanctuary city. Statistics, I mean, there have been several studies looking at equating the collaboration between police and immigration with public safety. And virtually every study, legitimate study that has looked at this has said there's no correlation between public safety and increased deportation rates, increased collaboration between local government and immigration. Now, when you say sanctuary city, I think it's important for listeners to understand what a sanctuary policy is. A sanctuary policy is simply a rule that says you don't spend local resources or state resources, taxpayer money, on the deportation machine. And localities and states have a right not to participate in the federal immigration enforcement program. And so when that happens, mass deportation cannot happen without other civic institutions, state, local, you know, private entities participating and joining with the federal government. And so one of the best way to stop en masse deportation is for all of us to come together and say, no, we're not going to participate in it. That's why Secure Communities, which is an Obama and a Bush program, was so incredibly effective. And we saw the highest deportation rates, far higher than we see today, under the Obama administration, when Obama successfully got police departments and sheriff's deputies to cooperate with ICE. And so you just had a mass transfer of criminal detainees, misdemeanor detainees, over immigration. But in terms of the sanctuary policy, we are far safer. In fact, there have been fewer immigration arrests in California under the Trump administration than there were under the Obama administration.
That's still true? I mean, I know that we were saying at the beginning of his presidency, is that still true? And A is the first part of my question, but the second part of my question then is, I mean, I know those of us in the activist community, the advocate community, we were enraged and we were doing things around ICE raids and deportations under Obama. But why the mass outrage at a whole new level, though deportations are happening at a much lower level under this president than they were the former?
So first question, I don't know about 2019, but in 2018, there were 6,210 in California interior immigration arrests. And in 2016, there were 6,651, less than Obama. But that was the last year of 2016 when immigration arrests greatly reduced. Why is there such a movement today? I think it's I think if you separate the discussion from what's happening on the ground to the rhetoric and the messaging, Donald Trump has one of the most dangerous things he's done is he's created this openness towards express racism. And he is just literally intentionally attacking people in his own country and creating divides between them and us. And people are responding to that. This is someone who started his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists. And I think that one of the things that Donald Trump has done is it exposed what immigration enforcement really is. It's inhumane. It is taking away the humanity of a person. Why is it that a mother who happens to have a deportation order, who's been working in this country for 10 years, cleaning people's houses, why is it okay that ICE could go and pick her up and separate her from her kids? And I think Donald Trump is exposing what deportation really means, and I think that's why there are so many. He's making the connection between racism and the deportation system as well as anybody, and I think that's why people are rising up. I think we're trending towards fascism as well. Donald Trump is trying to take people, take lawyers away from people. He's like making friends with dictators around the world. I think people are rising up and they're saying, no, we do not want this this kind of presidency. And it's beautiful. I mean, as an immigration lawyer, I've never seen this kind of public interest in, the border militarization or deportation machine. So it's very, very exciting. And again, we can beat a raid. We can beat these raids. We can provide outstanding representation. The community will be there to stop ICE from, violating civil rights. We'll be filing lawsuits. We have one of the most vibrant legal defenses in the entire country right here in the Bay Area. And we can win these cases.
We're speaking of Francisco Ugarte. He's an attorney with the Immigration Unit of the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, one of only three local public defenders in the entire country who devote attorneys and resources to representing immigrants in immigration proceedings, where they are, unlike criminal proceedings, not guaranteed a right to counsel. Francisco Ugarte, I was wondering if you could help us make sense of this morning's breaking news, which is apparently the Federal Register came out with a new rule published by the Trump administration. The long and short of which is that migrants who arrive at the southern border, having traveled through a second country and seeking asylum in the United States, will be categorically denied. Can you explain the significance of this?
I actually haven't seen that rule. I'll be honest with you. It just makes very little sense. I don't know how they could get away with publishing a rule like that. There is a concept in the law that if a person seeking refuge in the United States has sought refuge in another country or has firmly resettled in a different country before coming to the United States, then arguably they could be, and they had legal status in that country, the United States wouldn't have to accept the asylum claim. It could simply say, go to another country. But this is really a sweeping rule. Did you say that an asylum application would be categorically denied if they traveled through a country.
The Associated Press is saying there are limited exemptions, for instance, people who were trafficked through Mexico on their way to the United States would not be denied asylum in the United States. But again, this is apparently hit the Federal Register this morning at 6 a.m. our time. We've just seen the wire reports. We haven't had a chance to read the rule either, but is reported to take effect tomorrow.
No, that would be antithetical to our obligations under the Refugee Convention, which was created, you know, right after World War II, to stop, you know, mass genocide. And I just don't see how that rule could fly in court. It just doesn't make any sense. It would be irrational. It would essentially fly in the face of the statutory protections passed by Congress of the United States to assure that someone could seek asylum in the United States. I don't think a regulation could trump a statute. I guess we'll see. I'm sure that there will be a lawsuit on that rule. I'm 100% sure that we're going to challenge that. It makes very little sense. But I think it just shows you, it just once again shows us how important this fight is, because the Trump administration is a lawless administration. They're trying to avoid its own legal obligations, trying to stop people from coming to the border. I mean, we've seen the outrageous inhumanity of the way it treats families and children, caging children, my God. So we have to fight that.
This has long been a political aim of the Trump administration, expressed through negotiations with Mexico's government, the government of Andrés Manuel López Obrador, to reach a safe third country agreement with Mexico, in which migrants who get there first could be denied asylum in the United States if they were offered asylum in Mexico. Currently, we only have that with Canada. So it doesn't seem like out of line for the Trump administration to be trying to do this, just maybe a little bit out of their lane to be doing it in the Federal Register, right?
Yeah, no, it seems, and it seems it would be ultra vires, which in legal terms mean it would be outside of their authority under the statutory scheme. So there are regulations that the federal government can implement, but they can only implement regulations as long as they conform to the congressionally mandated laws that were passed. So I just don't understand how this could possibly pass. You see this over and over again from the Trump administration, but they've been getting hurt in our courts, and in our, you know, we've been able to resist quite effectively a lot of the changes he's tried to make. But it goes to, you know, again, we talk about these horrible things, but if you look at the San Francisco immigration courts, if you look at the deportation numbers, I'm not talking about the border right now, because I think in the border things are significantly worse, but we're still getting a significant number of grants in the immigration courts, meaning people who have removal proceedings and go before a judge, the judge is granting their case or not ordering removal. We've never had more lawyers on the ground providing representation for people ever in the history of, you know, removal defense. Obviously, we also have more immigration proceedings than we've ever seen as well. But we're doing quite well in right now in this resistance. And I think that one of the things that we have to do together as a community is to make sure to exercise also political power, not only power legally, not only power on the ground to stop ICE from doing its things, but also to get people like Nancy Pelosi, who represents San Francisco. San Francisco has been leading the resistance against this mass deportation, and Nancy Pelosi just recently authorized, against every single congressional representative's wishes, in the Bay Area, to give the Trump administration $4.5 billion unrestricted money to engage in deportation. It's unfathomable that the San Francisco congressional representative would be leading that coalition between right-wing Republicans and moderate Democrats against about 100 progressive Democrats.
Francisco Ugarte, we need to wrap up, but you were talking about that hotline. Can you say it again for our listeners? And also, what should people do or not do when they think that they know about a raid that is coming?
Sure. So there are several hotlines throughout the Bay Area. And also, we have a hotline at the Public Defender's Office. Our number is 415-553-1428. We will provide immediate representation if we hear about a raid, certainly in San Francisco, but we're working with other community members. If you think ICE comes to your door, you have basic fundamental constitutional rights. ICE needs a warrant to get into your home. So if sometimes ICE may say, oh, we have a warrant, you can ask, can I see the warrant? You have a right not to open your door. Many people have avoided or have successfully defended their constitutional rights by simply saying, no, I'm not going to come out I'm not going to let you federal agents into my house without a warrant. I think it's troubling that we're at a point where some people are recommending people not to open their doors when someone knocks. It's kind of crazy. And I, as a lawyer, I'm very ambivalent. I don't necessarily like repeating that message to people. It's a very disempowering message. But if strangers come to your door, probably you should see if they have a warrant. Certainly if they show themselves as law enforcement. The other thing ICE does, unfortunately, is that they sometimes call themselves police. We're the police. And we've tried to challenge that in various venues, but it's a deliberate misrepresentation to get people to believe they're police officers. So we don't want people, we want undocumented folks to report crimes, if they are a victim of a crime. But at the same time, right now is not the right time when people, if law enforcement comes to your doorstep, to not be asserting your rights.
Francisco Ugarte, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us this morning.
Thanks a lot.
Francisco Ugarte is an attorney with the Immigration Unit of the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, one of only three public defender's offices in the entire country who represent immigrants in deportation proceedings. That's an area of civil law. There is not a right to representation for immigrants facing deportation the way there is in criminal proceedings. And I should mention, in addition to the hotline number that he gave out specifically for the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, which I believe he said had 8 attorneys on call yesterday in anticipation of ICE raids, the number he gave out was 415-553-1428. We have posted county by county rapid response hotline phone numbers for the entire Greater Bay Area at the very top of our website, www.kpfa.org. It's right at the top of the website, kpfa.org. You can get it, you can read it, you can print it, you can put it in your wallet, you can share it.
And what I was actually trying to get to is that if you think that you know of a raid, the answer is not to put that all over Facebook and Twitter, but rather call one of those hotlines mm-hmm. and get that information to the organizations and the people that are geared up and ready to protect our community members.
Yeah, I think important to remember the basics of immigration enforcement in this country is that there are close to 1 million people with outstanding removal orders against them. It is logistically impossible with every agent in the federal government's control mobilized to deport even a fraction of them. Mm-hmm. And the only way the federal government has a meaningful impact is if it uses the threat of deportation mm-hmm. and fear of deportation mm-hmm. to inspire terror, to terrorize people into staying away from their homes, staying away from their jobs, risk getting fired for no showing. So it's really important to engage with it in like a level-headed, fact-based way.
That's right.
Or you're part of the terror machine.
That's right. Absolutely.
And one of the things those hotlines are doing is nailing down facts, sorting out rumors and hearsay from things that are actually happening.
Right. Friday, I think it was Friday.
Friday was the vigil in Oakland.
Friday was the vigil in Oakland, yes, which I was out ill, so I didn't get to see it. But I did have to drive into Berkeley to get something, and I could not figure out why the traffic was so bad because it was pretty late at night. And I looked up, and I just love living in the Bay Area. It was lit because people had taken over that bridge right there on the 80, right, with, you know, no camps, no deportations, and candles, and people were literally stopping on the freeway to honk and support the folks on the bridge. So, so we end the segment on that note of Bay Area resistance. We continue to show up and show out for our folks.
Oakland's one of those towns that can just melt your heart and break your heart all in the same day.
One of those regions.
You are tuned to KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KPFB 89.3 FM in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K24 8BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online around the world at www.kpfa.org. This program is Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I'm Kat Brooks. And coming up next, what are we doing next, Brian?
Apparently, there is a giant kerfuffle over oil and gas extraction in the state of California.
Lots of new fracking permits being approved, and apparently employees that work in the department that oversees those have money interest in the companies they're supposed to oversee.
And Governor Gavin Newsom says he had no idea. He is shocked. He has ordered the firing of California's top oil regulator. We'll get into this after the break, but I'm shocked that he's shocked because as lieutenant governor, he had an ex officio seat on the board that oversees the agency that oversees oil and natural gas extraction. The one and only time we got him into our studios for an interview, we talked about that.
More on that coming up
after the news.